When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You can go out and catch apples falling from the trees.
Me and Howard are just flapping away, showing how big apple catcher knickers would be. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Bake Down podcast, where we will be discussing episode 3 of this year's Bake Off, Bread Week. I'm Sarah, and once again I'm joined by Howard Middleton, Jane Beadle, and Dan Beasley-Harling, three amazing bakers who've not only been in the tent themselves, but who also run some delicious classes with us online at Bake With A Legend. And speaking of classes, we have our third bake-along with the Bake Off class coming up this Sunday, where we will be doing pizzas with Rosie Brandreth. She'll be taking us through Bread Week's signature challenge. So head over to bakewithalegend.com to see all of our upcoming classes, including some brand new classes and some back by popular demand. And don't forget to use the code PODCAST for 10% off your next class booking. So it was Bread Week this week in the tent, and a much smaller group than usual due to Rebs and Abdul being absent due to illness. Very odd to see only 8 bakers in the tent this early in the competition, but we hope to welcome Abdul and Rebs back next week. We had a much more savoury week this week, where the bakers let their cooking skills shine in a pizza signature challenge, a pano raisin technical challenge, and a Schmirgestarte showstopper. I'm going to apologise now for all of our pronunciation for the rest of the episode. So let's get stuck in with our signature, 2 sharing pizzas. Howard, are you a thin and crispy pizza lover, or do you like deep dish?
Oh, I like thin and crispy, yes. Oh, definitely. I'm not averse to a bit of a stuffed crust. I do like that sort of slightly thicker edge to it, but I definitely want crispiness underneath and bits that are charred and slightly breaking off as well.
Dan and Jane, you two are both nodding in agreement. Is this something you guys want to see in your pizzas as well?
Go on, Jane. Ladies first.
Well, I go first. Oh, thank you, Dan. I'm no lady, I have to say. yes, I agree with Howard totally. I think there's nothing worse than a big fat floppy pizza, I think, with slightly undercooked or too squishy dough. Now, I never really liked the big old deep pan pizzas. They were very fashionable, weren't they, way back before Dan was born, probably.
We had them in the 90s, I remember.
It's just that you look so young, Dan. I couldn't imagine that you possibly did.
Thank you. The retinoids are working, clearly.
I know. Clearly, you've got a good filter on that camera this morning. definitely. Thin and crispy. And I do love a stuffed crust. And I have to confess, I don't know whether you get it in the US, but Domino's pizzas. And everybody goes, Domino's pizza, shocking horror. That's something you should keep in as a secret. Well, I love a Domino's and I love the crust dipped in there. Really disgusting, but utterly delicious chive and whatever cream, sour cream dip that they sent along. So there you go. I've just given away my deep dark secret here.
I have to say, I am not averse to a filthy Domino's pizza. My kids love them, but my husband will literally, or if we order Domino's, he will order from somewhere else. He's not down with that. He's like, I'm not eating that muck. So yeah, just to offer a bit of balance and impartiality to the podcast. But no, I generally, it will be no surprise to anyone that I generally agree with Howard and Jane on this one. Yes, I like something thin and crispy. And I did think it was particularly amusing. One of the feedbacks that we got, I can't remember who it was for without looking at my notes, said that their pizza was American style. And that was sort of like a slightly derogatory way of referring to the pizza. And I immediately thought of all our lovely American friends who listen to our podcast and wonder how they would be taking that on this day. So I hope that no one is too upset about that one. But yeah, we're not a huge fan of the sort of deep dish style across the water, are we?
I think I am. So I'll keep my mouth shut and we'll move on to the next question. Pineapple on pizza. This is something that I think divides many of us, divides families, nations, parents and children. James clearly thinks it does belong, and I believe Sandro put a little bit of pineapple in his as well. Jane, does pineapple belong on pizza?
Oh, no. It doesn't belong on pizza. It doesn't belong on gammon slices with the cherry on top, which is something that used to be done this year. No, it doesn't. Pineapple belongs in a cocktail, in a dessert, in a really delicious cake with coconut, but on a pineapple. Actually, I have to say this episode had me heaving in a couple of places this week. I really didn't like some of the combinations, but no. And just to put pancetta on as a modern twist, clearly didn't cut it for me either.
It's just bacon.
Pancetta's been around quite a long time. It's not exactly modern, is it?
As a child, I really liked Hawaiian pizza. It was my favourite type of pizza. I used to love ham and pineapple. I don't eat it as an adult. In one breath, I think people should enjoy whatever they enjoy. But it's as you know, any Italian listening will be screaming at the very thought of sweet fruit on a pizza. But then we also saw figs on a pizza, didn't we? We saw other various sort of sweet toppings. So I think it can work. But yeah, it definitely has a bad rep, the old pineapple on its pizza. I think Howard probably loves it, don't you, Howard?
No, I don't, actually. I wouldn't choose pineapple on a pizza. Do I look like I've got the kind of face of a man who likes pineapple on pizza?
I just said that to wind you up. Sorry, Howard.
I'm not the kind of person who would say never. Do you know what I mean? If someone said to me, try this, you know, you might like it. And I think, yeah, okay, that does work in those circumstances. So I'm prepared to be surprised, I think.
But I do love, I had dished up at something. I play golf and people might have noticed. And when you go away, play a competition at a different club, they will lay on refreshments at the halfway stage, you know, just to keep you all going for the second line. And somebody dished up a cheese and pineapple on cocktail sticks, which was very 70s, wasn't it? You used to stick them in a half turned up grapefruit because it was all very, very fantastic in those days. And I'd forgotten how much I absolutely adore cheese and pineapple together. But maybe just not on a pizza.
You clearly came from a very classy neighbourhood, Jane. Obviously, I was far more working class. In my day, it was a potato covered in foil that had the cocktail stick stuck in.
So we did see a lot of sweet flavours. Kevin's Bring Us Some Figgy Pizza contained figs, chilli jam and a bit of balsamic drizzle. We also had something else on a pizza that possibly doesn't belong. Dan, what do you think about Janusz's full English breakfast on a pizza?
Egg on a pizza, love it. Okay. We've already started mentioning chain restaurants, haven't we? I think it's Pizza Express, where you get the one that's all spinach and then there's a fried egg in the middle. Would it be fried baked egg in the middle? I like that. I'm a fan of that. Egg in the middle of a pizza feels a little bit special, a little bit exotic and exciting to me. You can tell I don't get out much. So I quite enjoyed
it. Dan.
I know, right? But I've got to have some positives. But so I really liked it. But I think the feedback that they got for that was a bit bland. Because when he said about baked beans, I thought, yeah, baked beans, what are they adding? Probably not very much. I mean, I'm not averse to baked beans, but they're not adding much in the way of texture or flavour. Yeah, some of those notes would have been a little bit invisible, I would have thought. And that was definitely the feedback that they got. But yeah, I mean, black pudding, love black pudding. And I think some people are quite horrified by the idea of a blood sausage, especially people who didn't grow up in England. But I think I rarely meet an English person who doesn't like black pudding.
I've never had it. Do you know?
No, Jane.
Because when I was young, I didn't like the idea of it. And then I've just never had it. No, I must try it.
God, I love it. It's so good. It's so rich. It's delicious.
Have you never had it with scallops as a starter?
No, I've not had it with anything. Anything at all.
Oh, everyone round to Jane's next week for black pudding pizza then.
Maybe I had a little tiny bit of it when, because Candice, I think, put it in her sausage rolls in the final. So I might well have eaten one of those, but I just don't remember. We were all so busy.
Oh, do you know what? It's absolutely wonderful. When you have a full English, just a little bit of it cut up and dipped in the runny egg yolk. Oh my God, heaven. So delicious.
Thanks very much. I'd have to.
What? Who is this woman? Get her out of here.
No, I'm not a great fried. No, I don't want the sort of rubberiness of the white very much. No, so
this is definitely going to be an episode of dividing opinions as we go through this.
Have we even started talking about a bake yet? We're still just ranting about food.
We're still on topics. But now you bring that up, Dan, let's talk about that. We didn't really get much of a sense of the different bases people were using. I believe James used 14% spelt flour in his base to give it a nutty taste. And that wasn't really mentioned in his comments. Shabira tried a beetroot sourdough base that didn't seem to come off. Did we focus too much on the toppings and not enough on the bread? Howard, what do you think?
I think it's a fair point. I mean, I think obviously visually you're looking at what you see on top. So I think toppings are really, really important. But yes, because we're not able to then see what the base is, we kind of rely on the judges to tell us whether the base is tasty, it's crisp, it's got flavour or whatever. And no, I don't think we did get our money's worth on that, really.
Well, of course, it is toppings week. So good job we focused on that. I think you're absolutely right. We didn't hear much about the bread, and obviously that was kind of the whole point. I would have thought the toppings were the easy bit. The bread would be the harder thing to get right. One of the things that interested me more, and I didn't think was touched on very much, was the stretching technique, which there was quite an interesting variety of technique, or lack thereof, with some people just sort of furiously mashing it over metal pans. And I think I only saw a couple of people stretching it in the way that I was taught, the way that I learned to stretch pizza, which, if anyone was paying attention to Shabira, the way she stretched it, that's the way that I was taught, where you sort of spin it on semolina and give it like a fat edge. And she did get some pleasing comments for the shape of her pizza, but everybody else was sort of very glossed over. And I just thought, goodness, the technique of making the bases maybe should have been better. And I think, yes, the toppings were interesting and varied, but I think the number of pizzas that were just sort of amorphous blobs was surprising. And maybe that's just me being hyper judgmental, but you know me by now.
Well, no, I think that's all very fair. I was spread mine out on semolina because it does give that lovely crunchy underneath, and just, yeah, I think you're right. I think that's my criticism for the show in general, actually, is we didn't focus on the bread or the main part of the task. We focused on the stuff that goes on it, and I was disappointed in that, actually. And you know, I think it would have been interesting as well in talking about the pizza stone, or some of them had perforated bases, and what's the best way of doing it, and how in a domestic oven, because they were all using domestic ovens, how you manage to get it crispy and what sort of temperatures you're working at, because that's the thing that differentiates a homemade pizza between one that's done in a, you know, either a proper pizza oven or a commercially made pizza supplier like Domino's, is the heat. And I think that would have been really useful to have talked about that, rather than just picking up somebody's bit of pizza and it flops over like that and going, oh, well, that wasn't cooked well enough, or it's too thick. Yeah, I don't think there was enough information. I completely agree.
I mean, we have seen pizza before, but I believe it was a technical challenge a few years ago, and it was just a margarita. There was much more looking at just the technique of making the base, as we've just spoken about. Howard, were you going to say something there?
Yeah, I was going to say, I think the other thing that was glossed over was that from our experience, I would suggest that the judges were eating cold pizza because it's probably been hanging around quite a while. So I mean, I'm nothing against a cold pizza. You know, I'll quite happily dive into a cold pizza. But it does have a different quality in terms of it will affect the kind of the base and so on, the rigidity of the base, and it will get a bit softer. So,
top tip for anyone who, like me, loves to eat leftover pizza the next day, just throwing it out there, it's nothing to do with Bake Off. If you just put it in a dry frying pan under a low heat and just leave it there for sort of like 5 minutes until the cheese on the top just starts to look a little bit melty, you'll get a lovely crisp bottom again and it'll really refresh it. But you definitely don't need any oil in the pan because it's already greasy enough. But yeah, just a little top tip because I discovered that it changed my life.
Same here. When you order, because you can get buy one, get one free extra large Domino's pizzas on a Tuesday night.
God, Jay, this is not an advert for Domino's.
So thank you, Domino's. I am open to sponsorship here. It does crisp up brilliantly in the pan. It's fantastic. So you can have it for lunch and dinner the next day. Oh,
the Bake Down podcast, next week sponsored by Domino's. Goodness me. We all love a takeaway. There's nothing wrong with that. We had some meaty flavours as well. Sandro's, I think, was received quite well by the judges, despite Prue saying it was a bit messy to eat. His sweet and spicy barbecue chorizo pizza, heart-shaped pizza with a camembert and honey stuffed crust. Oh, that sounds absolutely divine. Maxie as well had a sweet rosemary lamb pizza. And Dawn with her Tex-Mex pizza. Something I thought was rather odd from Paul that I wondered if you guys might like to discuss is he said that minced beef would have had more punch to it rather than the stewing steak. What do we think about that comment?
Well, I think, so the point of the stewing steak is, I mean, it's become, it used to be a cheap cut of meat, but it's become quite trendy these days because people want to do slow cooking has become very sort of fashionable. But the point of it was, it's a cheap cut of meat that you cooked for a very long time and that made it lovely and soft. But she didn't have a lot of time. So I think Paul was dead right here. Like, it would have just been better to have just fried up some mince. It would have had a similar flavour and it would have had a better texture. So I think that was correct. But sometimes you just get blinded by, you know, your ideas of what you think would be wonderful. Now, someone that I did think was wonderful, and maybe it was just me, but it was Carol. Now, Carol is, as we know, insane, but she does have some really interesting flavours. I love some of her flavours, and she had the washed rind cheese, the Reblochen. That's not one that I'm particularly familiar with, but anyone who follows me on Twitter will know that I rarely shut up about Epoisse, which is one of my favourite washed rind cheeses. And I don't think that they're available in America because they're unpasteurised, because they're sort of washed in a brine that causes only a certain type of mold to form on them. And it makes them smell like old sneakers, old trainers, like they really stink of feet. But they are absolutely delicious. And I really wanted to eat Carol's. It didn't look amazing, but oh my God, I was salivating looking at that. So I was excited actually to see what else Carol will give us in terms of flavours, because she seems very well travelled, doesn't she?
She does indeed. Howard, I know you're a big cheese fan. What did you think of Carol's tartiflette pizza?
Yes, I agree. Oh, it sounded. Do you know, this was one of those episodes where you think, oh, I wish I was there to taste some of these. You know, I've not got a sweet tooth, and the fact that you've got basically savoury for both the signature and the showstopper, I thought was amazing. My heaven, this week.
Absolutely. Jane, were there any toppings that really stood out for you?
Well, I just want to talk about Carol. So yes, this is the Carol part of the show. It just made me laugh so much when she was being interviewed and she said, I've got me lucky big pants on, me apple catchers.
What does that mean?
I've never heard.
You can go out and catch apples with falling from the trees.
Me and Howard are just flapping away, showing how big apple catcher knickers would be.
Clearly, Carol is yes, in good company there, because, dear listeners, you should see Howard.
I must point out, she wouldn't be wearing them at the same time. She's taken them off in order to catch the apples.
Oh, she's. Anyway, made me laugh. I love her. And just going back to her pizza, my daughter's partner is Italian. We were talking about focaccia. And just around the corner from where they live, they have a shop that does lots of beautiful focaccia. And they do a potato focaccia. And it's like carbs on carbs. How does that work? And we tried making it here. And actually, the potato on the bread goes brilliantly. So I would have loved to have had Carol's, because I adore cheese. And the potato on it as well as the tartiflette, I think, sounded brilliant. She just did what I always do and put much too much toppings on mine. I would, for my choice, I would have liked Kevin's, I think, except I think he went too sweet. I think the chili jam and the figs, I think he possibly needed, I don't know what cheese he put on there, actually. I haven't made a note of that.
Halloumi, I think.
Yeah. Oh, no, see, I wouldn't have wanted that. Halloumi goes rubbery, doesn't it, once it's gone
goes
cold.
What?
Rubbery. rubbery. Sorry, I've watched a lot of royal stuff this week, and you know, a lot of them not very good with their R's, are they? Rubbery. I was fortunate enough to be asked to be one of the judges in a lovely competition we have here for kids in the whole of my county. And one of the challenges they had was to make a pizza. And the girl that won overall, she was the most delightful, I think she was 13, made a walnut chili jam and roquefort pizza with rocket on the top. And the roquefort and the chili jam with the crunch of the walnuts was absolutely delicious. And I think Kevin's just needed something a little bit saltier and with a bit more flavour, I think, than halloumi to cut through the sweetness.
Blue cheese would have been great, actually. You're right. But one thing that did make me unreasonably angry was the figs that all rolled off. I just feel like if they're not attached, like things that are cumbersome to eat really fill me with rage. And just the fact that they were picking up the pizza and all the figs were just rolling straight off it, I just thought it just didn't work. That would have aggravated me. So I'm surprised they didn't moan about that, considering we had a lovely shot of the figs falling off both pizzas as the judges picked them up. So I wonder how we could have done that better.
Sliced, instead of done it in quarters or eighths. If you put slices of it, one, it might have looked prettier, and two, they would have cooked down in the time a bit more and perhaps gone a bit stickier. And if he had got a blue cheese or something a bit more melty rather than halloumi, it would have possibly stuck and become incorporated in that as well. It needed work, but I like the basic idea of it.
One thing I particularly enjoyed about Sandro was a couple of the things he said, which is how would you ungrease, a lot of them had greasy pieces at the end, and I think it was Matt said, how would you ungrease a pizza? And he said, in the same way I would ungrease my forehead with a little bit of dabbing. And I just, it really brought a lump to my throat in terms of, I was nearly sick when he said that. But it did make me chuckle at the same time. It's like when you're thinking about eating and you're like, But he did make me laugh, and I think Sandro is a kindred spirit for me now. And I really enjoyed the fact that he said, I'm positively glowing, maybe it's just my foundation. And I thought...
Look, I highlighted that very comment.
Yeah. I like Sandro. He's really growing on me. Yeah, he's really fun. He's got a really great sense of humour. I really like him.
We didn't mention Shabira, though, did we?
Oh, no, Shabira did well.
We should have, yes. I think she got, I must admit, Malaysian prawn, fine. Sambal, fine. Stinky bean. That didn't set me alight. A beetroot juice in the sourdough, that didn't set me alight either. So although they seem to really like it, it didn't do anything for me at all.
Stinky bean might be, like, have you ever had stinky tofu? Like, it's sort of like partially like fermented. It's not necessarily, and they tend to wash it before you, they sort of part ferment it and then wash it. So like kimchi is fermented, isn't it? You know, it's not necessarily unpleasant, but yeah, the name is not particularly attractive, is it? Hi, would you like to try some of my stinky bean? I think I'm good, actually. I think I'll leave it. keep your stinky bean to yourself, love.
I think it's like asparagus. I think it's just got that same quality that asparagus has. That...
Oh, maybe.
Well, I shall be searching out stinky beans in my local Sainsbury's, seeing what I can find.
Moving very swiftly on to our technical challenge this year was a pano raisin. Now, straight away, is it a bread? Is it a dough? Is it a pastry? What is it? Jane, what is a pano raisin really?
Oh, well, I suppose it squeaks in because you do make a yeasted dough to start with. I've got a lot of comments about this challenge, which I will... Anybody else would like to join in too? You make a yeasted dough, an enriched dough at the start. There were some issues, weren't there, about what do I do with the butter? Well, you don't melt it in, you rub it in. You only put a bit in. And then you leave it to rise, which I don't think any of them did. You leave it to rise for a while before you start doing all the work. So I think it's a cross between a pastry and a bread. So it's Danish pastry. We did it. Oh, did we do it in patisserie week? I can't remember which week we did it in. I lose track of all the names. But yeah, technically, I think they could have found a better or a more appropriate challenge for bread week. I think definitely this week they were sort of scraping around for challenges to make to be a bit different. So love a pano raisin. It's my husband's favourite Danish pastry, but not sure it was appropriate for bread week, really.
Yeah, I was kind of agree, but then also I thought it was a great technical. So I don't know if it really fit the theme of the week perfectly, but I thought as a technical, I thought it was really good because there was a lot of technique involved. And that's what I personally enjoy from a technical, is seeing lots of technique. And we know that obviously Paul has a great pano raisin recipe. And I believe, Jane, you were talking about how wonderful his pictures were in his recipe book just before we started this podcast.
Well, I'm obviously probably not his most favourite person anyway, and none of us are after these podcasts, but frankly...
Don't drag me into your mess.
Thank you for winding me up. What's said before the podcast should stay before the podcast, but as you've wound me up now, both in his cookery book, which I have here, and his online recipe, because I checked online as well, oh my goodness, you should see the tails on those.
What a hypocrite.
More tails there than there were seen at the royal funeral, frankly. I mean, he just got tails.
Too soon, Jane.
Oh, is it too soon? No, we could do that. Tails everywhere in his recipes. And also, one thing he stressed our week, we made Danish pastries in our week, and I made pano raisin. One thing he stressed is everything should be glazed. You should glaze them, even if you're going to ice them. You glaze them. You put an apricot glaze or something over the top of your pastry to make it all shiny and gorgeous. And he wasn't insisting on that either. I mean, it's just, Howard always talks about inconsistent judging. I just think this is inconsistent baking. It annoyed me. The whole thing annoyed me. You have to be fast and accurate. Well, you do because you're only given 2 hours and 45 minutes to do it. But you look at any decent recipes and it's leave this to rise for an hour, chill this for half an hour, chill it for another half an hour, chill it for another hour. Now leave it to rise for 2 hours. Now bake it. And you're 5-6 hours down the line. I just wish they'd mention that sometimes because somebody is going to make Danish pastries at home and think, oh, they look gorgeous. I can do it in 2 hours and 45 minutes. And then all your butter oozes out and they taste dry and they're unappealing and then you never make them again. I mean, I think at some point you ought to say, don't do this at home. I just think it was such a shame that they don't tell you a bit more about the theory behind making something like a Danish pastry because you shouldn't rush it. And although you can get away with it, it's a really tough one. So you've set me off, Dan.
I know, sorry. Can I ask you guys' opinion on something? So when they were talking about the tails, obviously everyone got anxious about the tails because it was the one thing that Paul actually said. And he never, in my series, he never gave any actual advice. So he said, like, oh, we really don't want to see the tails. I never tuck the tails ever. What I tend to do is on the bottom, when I'm rolling it up, whenever I'm rolling anything up, I just use a bit of water on the bottom and put no butter on the bottom bit and use water to like stick it together so that the dough will stick to itself. And then, as they said, just give it a nice long proof. There was lots of people tucking tucking the tails underneath. And I think because they just really didn't want them to come out. I've never done that. No. Okay. Because that's not a thing that I ever do. Do you guys do that? And Howard Sue, obviously, no. No?
I don't. No, I'd stick it down. You can stick it down with the water. And the prove. No, I never tuck the tails underneath.
Because I would have thought as they prove, they kind of like, if anything, it'd puff up, wouldn't it? It doesn't make any sense.
I felt sorry as well for whoever had done the kind of exemplary bake that they're sitting tasting. Because Paul's saying we don't want tails. And there's one there with a little tail poking out. And you think, oh yeah, you've got one right at the side of you.
The ones that Paul made?
Well, this was, I might as well get my hump out of the way, because he actually admitted, as he's tucking into it, he says, I'd forgotten how good these are, which more or less proves you've had nothing to do with this, have you?
Oh, goodness.
I mean, I don't know how much we really want to say about this, but yes, it's, you're like, I think there was one week he said, what was the last thing you baked? He was like, oh, blueberry muffins a week ago. And I'm like, oh, you didn't make the technical then, did you, Paul? So...
But of course he doesn't do them. Of course they don't.
Rather giving the game away there.
Well, there is a whole food team ready to assist, you know, but they are, I'm sure they're their recipes, but I don't know if they make them for the moment. They're far too busy concentrating on looking beautiful and exercising their advice muscles before they go on air, I'm sure.
It must have developed the recipe some time ago as well then, by that token, mustn't he? But...
He's very efficient, Howard, very efficient.
Is he right? Okay, use this one that I did 5 years ago. Actually, that was interesting because when I looked in his book, the pan raisin that he's got in there do take over 24 hours to make. So it must have been a different recipe to the one that's published in his book.
I don't know how people do this. So Rosie, who works with Bake with the Legend, she does a croissant that she makes in like 2 hours. And I do not know how that is possible. That's the same kind of dough as a Danish pastry. And like you say, some of them take 24 hours. My Danish pastry, if I make it, will always sit in the fridge overnight. So I don't know how anyone is doing them in two less than 3 hours. I mean, that makes no sense to me. I do kind of feel like they're setting them up for failure. I mean, obviously they can't do it over a day. But how can they also get a good result in that time? I don't know.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the technique here, because you've mentioned that it is a yeasted dough that we start with, but then we see a lot of butter, fridge, chill, roll, chill, the way we do with any laminated pastry. So, Howard, how exactly are they supposed to get lovely, crispy, yet risen pan au raisin? What would your technique be if you were doing these?
Well, I think, I mean, I've done puff pastry, rough puff pastry quite quickly. That you can do it if you can chill in the freezer, which will help to cool it down. You can actually avoid some of the chill in between layers. So you can, do a couple of folds and then chill. And as long as you are keeping that butter cold so that when it hits the heat of the oven, it's not going to melt immediately, you'll probably get away with it. So there are shortcuts, but it is really difficult to be able to get that fat, the butter, to be cold enough so that when it hits the heat of the oven, it's not going to just melt all over the place.
The tricky thing with doing that, though, in my experience, and maybe this is just the equipment that I'm working with, is that if you use a freezer, sometimes your butter gets so cold that then when you start rolling it out again, the butter all shatters and then you lose a lot of the lamination. So I think it's really difficult. I mean, maybe if you're on top of your game, like Howard is, maybe that's manageable. But for me, I find that far too challenging. But maybe if you've got every second to babysit it the whole way, maybe it's possible. But yeah, I think it's difficult whatever way you do it, surely.
So a bit of a tricky one, definitely. A few people had some trouble with butter leaking out, I believe. Poor Kevin seemed to struggle the whole way through, from saying he can make a creme pat with his eyes shut and then it being a little on the runny side, not using a proving bag. He definitely did struggle this week. Carol as well, also batch baking in a way her pan au raisin rather than spreading them out. But Maxi and Janusz were first and second respectively. With Janosch coming first, having nice tall and wide panraisin, good flavour and a good flake. What sort of technical challenge would you guys like to see in Bread Week? I mean, Dan, you've mentioned this is a good technical, maybe not for Bread Week. What sort of other things would you like to see us focusing on the bread in Bread Week? Jane?
Oh, a tricky one, isn't it? You put me on the spot now. But something bready. I don't know. I mean, we've done it before. Oh, they did it a couple of years ago, didn't they? But the babkas, some of the more interesting bakes that are definitely bread, or something with an enriched dough, but then that's going to push them up against on time. Or the plaiting. Why don't we repeat a plaiting again? Because that's something, there's so many interesting shapings of the dough that could have them really struggling just by descriptions. So something more bread-like, I think. It's about the texture of the bread, isn't it, for me, Bread Week, which I don't feel that we had in the signature. And to be honest, I know we're not talking about Showstopper, but I don't feel we necessarily had in Showstopper either. So I don't feel it was a proper Bread Week. I'd like a really good bread challenge, I think.
Yes, I think that's true, actually, Jane. I think every challenge, the bread aspect was not the star of the show. And that does rather defeat the point of Bread Week. But this Bread Week did give me something much more important than that, which is a new favourite contestant. And that is Dawn, who said, as she was making her creme pat, she said, "The secret is, don't be scared of it. Treat it with absolute contempt." And I just thought, Dawn, you and me... I see you, girl. I see you. So she is my new favourite contestant. I'm all about Dawn now.
You don't just limit that to creme pat, though, do you?
No, just everything in life. But I love Dawn. I love her. We're going to be best friends when this is over, I'm sure.
Okay. She might run a mile after this, Steph.
Well, before we go on to our Showstopper Challenge, let's take a couple of questions. Thank you, everybody, who sent in some questions for our lovely bakers, and let's dive straight in with one now. The first question is from Hermione and her grandma Rita, all the way in Maine, and they say, "We love baking together as grandma and granddaughter, and we learn a lot from each other. Is there anyone you've learned to bake from?" Dan?
Yes, I have learned to bake from Jane and Howard.
Aww.
They've taught me everything I know, which is why I know nothing. No. In all seriousness, so my mother obviously taught me some rudimentary bakes when I was young. But honestly, Bake Off taught me a lot. The internet taught me a lot. There are various pastry chefs that I particularly enjoy. I don't think it will add much to sort of single them out. But the great thing about baking is it's a journey that you can take even without direct guidance. There's so much information out there. There are so many sources of learning that, you know, it's really open to anyone. Even if you didn't have, even if you weren't lucky enough to have a grandmother who knows how to bake and can teach you everything she's learned. So yes, my mother taught me a bit, but most of what I've learned has been from things like, I mean, really, Bake Off's what got me into baking, to be honest. So yeah, for as much as we like to rip it to shreds, you know, but for our own amusement, it's, you know, it's a great TV program for inspiring people to get baking. And, you know, I credit my appearance on Bake Off to Bake Off. So yeah.
Howard, what about you? Is there somebody you've picked up tips and tricks from over the years?
Yeah, I think I've probably said before about my mum, certainly in terms of basic sort of bread and cakes, pastry, although she's not very good at pastry, but yeah, that's her cross to bear, isn't it? Sorry about that. But yes, I think...
Read her, Howard.
I think also, as Dan said, you know, watching people on TV, you know, books as well. I've always bought kind of baking books and, you know, long before Nigella's How to Be a Domestic Goddess, which was one of my first kind of baking books to buy. Possibly because I just fancied the idea of being a domestic goddess, I think.
And you are, Howard. You absolutely are.
Thank you.
Jane, what about you?
Well, I was a bit like the others. You know, the internet these days is amazing, isn't it? So we continue learning. You don't stop learning. You, even at my ripe old age, you continue learning. There's always something. But I was fortunate enough in that my grandfather had a bakery. And so my dad taught me quite a lot. He was really into decorating and bits and pieces like that. So it would always be dad that would ice the Christmas cake and very often make the Christmas cake and certainly do our birthday cakes. I mean, sadly, the bakery got sold when I was about 6 or 7. So I didn't really get into learning much from them. It's just sampling all their delicious baked goods, which I've talked about in the past. As far as books are concerned, Delia was fantastic for me. I think Delia helped a lot of us cook and bake, and her Christmas baking book is still my favourite one at Christmas to dig out and get a bit of inspiration for. And I'm sure all of you all over the world have heard of Good Housekeeping. Good Housekeeping, tried and tested, four times proofed recipes and all that have been amazing. So if you're in any doubt about whether a recipe is going to work and you're a new baker, head to Good Housekeeping because they really do work. They aren't just churned out after one trial and lots of fingers crossed. They're a very good place. So there's so much help out there. I just love it. I just love YouTube now because people will show you all sorts of exciting things and techniques that you can't quite understand in books. So I think we're in a very... We're very lucky now to have all of that social media and all that wonderful stuff at our fingertips, but I still love a book. I do still love a book.
So bearing all those answers in mind, let's have a look at the next question from Julia in Surrey. And she says, I wanted to ask the bakers, if you could all have a masterclass with one chef or baker, who would it be? Jane.
Oh, gosh, I really don't know.
A very rare moment, listeners, where all our bakers are completely silent.
How about me, Jane? Would you like to have a masterclass with me?
Well, as long as it's not macarons, Dan, I'd be delighted. can I have two bakers?
Go on, then.
Can I have one for bread? And that would be Richard Bertinet, or Bertinet, whatever, because he is amazing. And one from the other side of the world, because she is patisserie queen in Australia, and that's Kirsten Tibbles. There you go. She is amazing, and they do the most fantastic stuff over there. I can't remember the name of her cookery school now, but she is fantastic. So, yes, if I could have two, I could have the bread end and the sweet and very decorative end. They would be my two.
Howard, what about you?
Yeah, after I'd done Bake Off, some of us from our year went and did a day with Richard Bertinet, which was wonderful.
You?
Yes, it was lovely. We booked ourselves there. It was fantastic. I really, really enjoyed that. So that's one ticked off. But yeah, I'd love to. I'm quite easy. I'd learn from anybody. I'd happily, have a day with Delia or with Nigella, I think, yeah.
Dan, anybody stands out for you?
Oh, I'd like to hang out with Nigella. I would love to go to one of her dinner parties. In terms of sort of pastry chefs who I like, I really like the Canadian pastry chef Anna Olson. She's just sort of the very similar style to me, which is just sort of classic stuff executed well. Like, that's what I enjoy doing, and she's sort of brilliant at that kind of stuff, and I've learned a lot from Anna Olson over the years, so yeah, probably her. And again, and mainly just because I want to hang out with her, and I love her kitchen. If you ever watch her program, I mean, I'm sure it's a work kitchen, although she sells it as a home kitchen. She's got like 6 ovens and drawers with built-in ingredients all in them, and this is like my dream kitchen. I just want to go hang out with Anna Olson. Yeah, she's a bit of a hero of mine. So yeah, I've learned a lot from her.
Well, thank you guys. And thank you to Rita, Hermione and Julia for your questions. And thank you for everybody who writes in a question for us. Keep them coming in. You can send them to thebakedown@bakewithalegend.com. And next week we could be reading your questions on the podcast. Right, so here we are, showstopper in Bread Week, and we had the mighty Schmirgestorte, which I believe is a cake made out of bread and sandwich ingredients. Now, we've spoken earlier on in the podcast about bread not really being the hero of this week. Howard, do you think that was the same thing again? Do you think we saw more toppings than bread?
I think so, yeah. I think it's basically going back to the series one where I think where they had to make sandwiches as one of the the exercises. But this is obviously sandwiches on a grand scale, isn't it? Turning it into a cake. But yes, I think it was a little bit disappointing that we didn't get to kind of see a bigger variety, I think, in terms of the bread. It was some of the fillings sounded amazing, though.
Yes, we had a variety of fillings, some of which I think you guys are going to really enjoy, and I think some of which you guys are going to pull apart. Jane, you made a not exactly lovely face there when Howard talked about fillings. Was there anything that really did not float your boat?
Oh, God, frankly, most of them. It's really not my thing. God, I really hated this challenge in so many ways.
Tell us how you really feel, Jane.
It was fine. The challenge was absolutely fine. really not much bread. I mean, at one point, poor old Dawn said, yes, the bread was good, but too thick. Well, if it was any thinner, by the time you shoved all that stuff in it, you wouldn't taste it, would you? I mean, we're going back to Amazon packaging. You might as well just suck slices of cardboard in, really, and just soaked it in fish, because most of it was fish. Fish and cream cheese and mayonnaise. Oh, it all made me feel really quite queasy. And Janusz's fish and chips and a sandwich. I mean, mushy peas and fish and curry sauce. Or covered in revolting icing. Oh, I mean, it was just not my thing at all.
I think sometimes things sound nice and sometimes they just don't. Like, I love a fish finger sandwich, but when you say fish and chips in a bun with mushy peas and vinegar, I'm like, oh, a step too far. Apparently it was nice, but yeah, it didn't sound great, did it?
Oh, they've said it. They said it sounded nice, and then cover it in all that yellow curry sauce, cream cheese, I assume, mix. And
I just want to assure our listeners that Jane's absolutely horrified facial expressions are really adding to this.
Yeah.
Well, I never thought I'd be saying this, but Howard, let's move on to you for some positivity in this challenge.
I agree with Dan. I thought I had to distance myself from Janusz's at one point, because I'm not a great fan of curry sauce, but everything else I could cope with, because you're right. I'm thinking fish finger sandwiches, I'm thinking chip butties. You know, there's a sort of link there that might work. I suppose the benefit of a fish finger sandwich is that the fish is warm. And here we were talking about cold fish and chips, weren't we, which probably has a slightly different quality. But again, I would be prepared to... Do you know, it sounds as if I'll eat anything, doesn't it?
Yes.
I was a little bit disappointed, I have to say, with Sandro's, because I did that. I mean, it looked impressive, sort of like a wedding cake type thing. But I'm thinking, these sound incredibly similar to the flavours that you've had in your pizza. So the honey was swapped for maple syrup, and the camembert swapped for cream cheese. And then we've got loads of smoky barbecue meat in there. So I didn't think, I thought I was a bit disappointed that there wasn't a bit more variety. But it's making my mouth water, honestly, thinking about all these. I'm sorry.
Shabira definitely carried on her flavours from her pizza as well, carrying on with the sambal flavourings as well. Jane, you have your hand beautifully and politely raised. Would you like to say the next comment?
No, it's unlike me. I usually just butt in, don't I? Just while we were talking about Sandro, again, going back to the this is bread week, he said, mine's plain old white bread. Easiest thing to do. Can't go wrong.
No.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's a bread week challenge. When we did our showstopper way back, we were told we had to use 3 different types of flours in ours and make bread work, you know, and it's bread. It's not what you stick between the layers. This is a bread week challenge. So I thought, I was really disappointed that plain old white bread, because it's the easiest thing to do, was appearing in the showstopper. I mean, I love a piece of white bread, especially toasted with some good old homemade jam or marmalade, but this is bread week. It shouldn't be about the pulled brisket and the barbecue sloppy joe sauce. It should be about the bread.
We didn't have many comments about the bread at all, according to my notes. Please do correct me if I'm wrong. I've written down, like, good bread, dry bread, a bit thick. Most of the comments were really, as you say, about the sauces and the flavourings. It seemed to be a what do we put on our bread week, not bread week. Dan, what are your comments on the showstopper?
Yeah, I very much agree that the bread was not the star. And I thought some of the flavor, I think people just went a bit too nuts. So I have had one of these before. I didn't know it was called a smorgasbord, but I've had like a cake, sandwich cake before. But that was, again, very classic. It was salmon, cream cheese and asparagus, the one that I've had. And I think Maxi, because obviously she has Swedish background, knew what was really was required, like just egg and cress sandwich. And I thought, yeah, that actually sounds delicious. I want to eat an egg and cress sandwich. Thank you very much. I don't necessarily want to eat. Well, the chicken souvlaki sounded nice, but obviously the execution was poor, it seems. I love a souvlaki. And Spirit of the Nasi Lemak, I think I met her. I don't know what that is, but I thought it looked beautiful. But again, it was the bread the star? I don't know. At least she put some seeds in her bread. At least she did something with it. Sandro's was the other one that stuck out to me just because he called his bake the ultimate. And I just think that kind of arrogance is you're just waiting to be struck down by God for that. Like, and yeah, you never do that. I mean, you know, I like to blow my own trumpet as much as the next man, but I think that's just asking for trouble. And yeah, it looks like the barbecue overwhelmed it, as they said. So that was a bit disappointing. So I think a lot of the people who really tried to go big on flavours ended up not pulling it off, which I think was a bit of a shame because the bread wasn't the star, the flavours weren't the star. So it was a beautiful challenge in terms of like the appearances of some of them were really impressive, which is obviously great television. But I don't know if that translated to anything that I particularly want to eat. I thought Kevin's was... the execution of the decoration wasn't the best, but it was really fun. It was a fun idea. I like all the sculpting that he did with the cucumber. So it might not have been the most sophisticated looking thing, but it was fun. And I enjoyed that. And I also really liked Carol's appearance, despite the fact that somebody said it looked like something Fanny Craddock would have done, which I thought was a huge compliment. It's retro. It's like sometimes it's not about being trendy, it's about like executing a theme and like making something look stylish. And I thought she did that. It might not have been a style that everybody likes, but I liked it. I thought it was fun. It was sort of regular. It was a look. It was a look. And I enjoyed that look. So I thought the decoration, some of the decoration was great. But yeah, just some of the flavours, even if they did work, just sounded not the most appealing.
Jane, what do you think?
Well, just going back to Kevin, he said he was going to use blah, blah, blah flour. And I've
said
three times, and all I've got is what flour? I couldn't remember what flour it was he was saying he was using. Now, I love a Scottish accent, but they could have actually said, I have no idea what flour it was that he put in here.
They said it was like a heritage grain, so it'd be something like einkorn or something, right? I don't know.
Yeah, but it didn't sound like einkorn, did it? I was thinking...
Dawn used a sort of, she said, an ancient wheat.
Oh, that's true.
Well.
Yes, that's what I thought was anchor.
Kind of grown it or something, but I couldn't work out what this was at all.
But nobody noticed in the judging. Nobody said anything about that, did they?
No, they didn't. Again, bread week. Okay. And it was Paul who said about Carol's, how very Fanny Craddock, how very 60s. Well, I looked this thing up because I'd never heard of a smorgasbord before. And all the pictures look very Fanny Craddock and very 60s. My brother lives in Norway, has done for over 40 years. He's married to a lovely Norwegian girl. And I mean, they are all a bit 60s with their decoration, to be perfectly honest. And that's fine. And Paul does love to throw out the, oh God, that looks very retro or very Fanny Craddock or very 60s. But I agree with you, Dan. I thought it really looked as charming as a smorgasbord in the bake-off tent could look. He's so very unfair with his comments sometimes. It's almost like he takes again somebody and chucks out the same old insults year after year.
I thought James did well as well this week. I thought he...
Oh, yes, he did.
Yeah, I quite liked his little panda bread. And the idea of that char siu pork with plum sauce actually did sound rather nice. I know they said it was the same all the way through, but I think that was part of the problem with some of the others, that they were trying to put too many contrasting flavours in there. And actually, you know, to put char siu pork, plum sauce, bit of cucumber, sounds quite nice, actually.
I thought it sounded lovely, and I love those little pandas. I thought they were adorable. Yes, the only one that you noticed that Prue pulled the bread about going... Nice bread.
Just about to say that, so for a decorative piece of bread, it actually looked really nice texture. Like it wasn't some dead dough just to stick on the top. It was fluffy and light. It looked lovely.
It was milk bread he used, didn't he? He made a milk bread.
Oh, did he?
Yes.
That would have been delicious.
Milk bread. And I thought it was lovely. And I thought it was really interesting. Like Kevin, you know, is with their decoration. I thought they were lovely. Absolutely lovely, rather than doing a three-tier thing that looked like a wedding cake, which didn't appeal to me at all, frankly. I did love the... I know Kevin's was a couple of layers, but I loved the cucumber man. No, I was really disappointed with this challenge. I thought I was going to like it when we started with pizzas, but it all just sort of fizzled out for me, this particular episode.
So with every week, we have to crown our star baker. And this week it was Janusz, coming first in the technical. He definitely did really well, as well as his slightly controversial, but in the end, delicious fish and chip shop, smorgasbord, and his full English breakfast pizza. Jane, star baker for Janusz. Good.
I found it really hard to choose between them this week. So yes, Janusz was as good as the others. I think I've made it clear that I didn't particularly like this challenge. I'll get too excited, but Janusz, as always, was enthusiastic and heartwarming, and I think he did as well as, yeah, any of them really. So
sound more enthusiastic, Jane. Come on.
Janusz was fantastic. No, I'm being Mrs. Grumpy this week. I just didn't like the challenges very much. So, yes, well done, Janusz, for the second time, star baker. Shame I didn't pick you for my finalist, but well done. Oh dear, sorry everybody.
And unfortunately, we do have to send somebody home every week, but this week, nobody left. What a turn of events. We do often see that when people are ill, as it does kind of maybe become a little unfair to send somebody home, especially when two people are ill. So, Howard, nobody went home this week. Who do you think was very relieved?
Oh, yes. I think Dawn had a bad week, hadn't she? She looked really as if she was quite nervous all the way through, I thought. And Carol had just kind of ploughed on regardless. I think Carol seems to be really enjoying the experience of being in there. So I think it was a huge relief to both of them, really.
Well, there we go. Thank you so much for joining us, everybody, for listening to episode 3 of our podcast for this year. I want to say a huge thank you to Dan, Jane and Howard, as always, for joining me and for giving all your wonderful opinions. And thank you also to our listeners. We hope we will see you all at a class very, very soon, whether it's Rosie's Chocolate Biscuit Bars class on Saturday, the 22nd of October, Karen's Chocolate Millionaire's Tart on Saturday the 12th of November, or Ian's Raspberry Entremets on Saturday the 19th of November. We know you will definitely find the right class for you. So head on over to bakewithalegend.com, use the code PODCAST for 10% off your next booking. We'll see you all very soon at a class, and we'll see you next week on our podcast. Bye everyone.
Thank you. just heard a Stripped Media production.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.